nice. It wasn't nice of me to read it either. I'm just sitting there randomly reading text here on the Specs text line. Somebody else, you're talking about Kelly the sewer being a beekeeper. So wish I could talk with her keeper. I have 3 acres and would like to put some hives out. She is the beekeeper. I've seen it. And I actually see the video and stuff of her. Then somebody else says, something not many folks are aware of is that humans manually pollinate plants sometimes instead of bees, and humans do a much more thorough job than the bees. Humans have always been good about pollinating. I'll leave it at that. Second hour of Light the Tower here on the
I'm guessing Kelly's never played beehive tetherball.
Probably not. It's probably not that
Snoop, did you ever take a look at that? The Jackass movie when they played beehive tetherball?
Yeah, I saw that in the theater.
You did?
Okay. Yes.
We've established on the show, Craig is not a big fan of Jackass. Were you all about it? Were you all about it back in the day?
I enjoyed it. Like, the whole MTV culture, I dug. Like, I was into Real World, Jackass, of course, and to a lesser extent, Ridiculousness with Rob Dyrdek.
See, I think it's just, I don't know.
I stopped there, though. Like, I didn't go deep into it.
Right. So if you were a Real World huge, is Kevin Dunn like one of your heroes or something?
He was definitely a cool guy, for sure. Like, KD was that dude. Well, one, because he was like, a ladies man, and he was on the Real World. Yeah. And my Real World story, when they were in Austin, I was actually talking to Rachel, one of the girls that was in that season. I was working at Jamba Juice, and they would come in there to get smoothies to escape the cameras. And that's, how I got to talking with her. We actually went downtown in a little bit, and they maybe even signed a disclaimer thing, but I never was in the show.
Oh, okay. Anyway, but there you were, just doing your thing at Jamba Juice.
Real World, baby.
Before MTV. You were Snoop of Wall Street, you could have been Snoop of Hollywood.
I know. Oh, God. Rachel, she's so cute. I like Johanna more, but anyway.
Did you ever talk about that stuff with Kevin?
No. Well, he actually had an actual role. He was actually on the show.
I know. That's why I asked that.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
That's why I told you that he did it. I guess it's been 20 years since he did it. Mm-hmm. And then when he came back, he was our sideline reporter the one year that Keith Moreland and I were doing the Westlake broadcast. And speaking of bees, it was like, bees to the pollen, to the flower, the way that the cheerleaders and the dance teamers all just flocked to him on the sidelines. I mean, then they were just, wanting pictures and autographs and things like that.
It helped the Miz being so cool.
Yeah.
It also helped Kevin, too. It was a good cast.
Yeah, yeah. He kind of he kept it above board, so that was good. That was good. We go with the big stories. We're talking about the possibility of no football this fall. Somebody said, are they canceling or postponing football? I think the key words here for the text are they're calling off football, apparently, or going to, in the Big Ten, and then probably the Pac-12 will come off with an eye toward playing in the spring. So that would fall under the category of postponement. However, they didn't say that, right? They didn't in what the Detroit Free Press was reporting.
Jeff. Yeah, and I'm seeing that Jim Harbaugh has apparently released a statement advocating for a fall season. Coach, not sure that really matters at this point when your conference commissioner and your the powers that be above you have decided that you're not playing football this fall.
The decision will not rest with the head coaches, nor will it rest, apparently, with the athletic directors, although they will have obvious input into all of this. But it's university presidents and regents members and conference overall people who are making the call on this.
Yeah, and I mentioned, Craig, I was scanning the Scott Satterfield, the Louisville head coach's press conference today.
Yeah.
It was previously scheduled.
Where was he going with it?
He's had a lot to say, but the kind of the money quote that's getting out there now is he's saying the ACC is moving forward no matter what other conferences do.
Okay.
So apparently in the ACC they're playing football. Sounds like the SEC, the SEC's down for whatever. I really do believe they'll play in a parking lot if you tell them, hey, CBS will put this on at 2:30 on a Saturday. They'll play wherever. The Big 12, I saw a report from Pete Thamel that apparently the Big 12 is uncertain. Their conference remains divided on playing. Uncertainty about long-term medical impact looms as an issue. Expect the Big 10 and Pac-12 decisions to impact the Big 12's decision. Craig, if this league is divided, We're going to be waiting a while to see what an answer is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true, too.
Because nobody, or Chris Berman, you'd say nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Nobody filibusters like the Big 12.
Well, that's true. The desk from which 1,000 indecisions have been launched, right?
Yeah. So, Craig, I've tried to be optimistic, but my hope for a college football season of any sort in the last 24 hours is it's waned, man. It is. I'm about ready to just wave the flag. I wish I could. I almost said raise the flag like I'm at Poncho's waiting for my sopapillas. I wish I was at Poncho's getting sopapillas.
Wish it were that simple, right?
Yeah, I wish it was. Pretty close just waving the flag on this deal because it's not looking
well,
good.
Well, I am intrigued by the dichotomy of comments. One based on tweets coming from people who say they have been told. And I'm not doubting that. I'm just saying their conversations are the things that they've been told that this is going to happen, that the Big Ten is going to shut it down. And it very well could be the case. Juxtaposed against not only, you know, Jim Harbaugh saying that he's advocating for a fall schedule and all that. If nothing else, Jim Harbaugh could be saying that to just say, hey, just to let everybody know, this is where I am on it. I don't have any power decisions, but I'm for playing. You know, it could be that. But juxtaposed against Scott Satterwhite saying, we're full steam ahead. And whereas the Big 12's leanings are being gauged by others about how they might or might not be influenced by the decisions of the Big 10 and the Pac-12, strangely silent right now, the SEC, who we're all figuring is hell-bent to play regardless.
Can I just run down this? Because not just Scott Satterfield, Louisville, Jim Harbaugh, Jeff Traylor at UTSA came out and said.
In addition to Scott Satterfield?
Yeah, let me see if I can find the Jeff Traylor quote. I just had it. Yes, this is J.J. Perez who covers UTSA for us at 24/7 Sports. There's a risk either way. I do feel like there's a greater risk if the kids do not play, which has been talked about a lot.
Absolutely.
In the last 72 hours. These are the bullet points, Craig, that Jim Harbaugh laid out in why he's advocating for a fall football season. The Michigan program has had 11 positive tests out of 893 administered, including 3 upon initial return to campus. 2 positive tests out of the last 417 administered. 0 positive tests out of the last 353 administered. There have been 0 positive tests among the coaches or staff over the entire 8 weeks of testing. There has been no contact tracing to our fields, weight room, locker room, or facility. We have had 0 pauses in our training. We have complied with all CDC guidelines and self-implemented stricter standards for contact tracing and quarantining to prevent spread. We've followed all health and safety guidelines. As Daryl Conway, and this is again from Jim Harbaugh, as Daryl Conway, our chief medical officer and member of the Big Ten's medical advisor group, has stated, I wish that others could see this model. So Jim Harbaugh is saying, look, basically, regardless of what the Big Ten decides, this shouldn't fall on universities. And he's citing his case in Michigan where they've followed the rules. They've done what the conference asked them to do. They're down to just like Texas, down to no, you had some positives, but now you're down to no active cases. Nothing's been traced back to on-campus workouts. So the thing that bothers me, Craig, is I'm all for the student athletes. And because there's really nobody in the grand scheme of things, I don't think, that's looking out for them. Yes, people care about their well-being, but I do think they should be compensated. But that's an argument we can get down a road we can go down another day.
Mm-hmm.
My big problem with this is, why would the Big Ten put out a schedule and be gung-ho about the season almost like knowing they were going to pull it back a few days later? Like, I just don't understand what the point of one or the other act was.
And again, that's going to bring to mind a question of left hand, right hand, in terms of, you know, was someone directed, let's go ahead, let's release the schedule, even though this is kind of hanging over us, or let's go ahead and release the schedule, and then 48 hours later, whoa, we moved too quickly on this.
Yeah.
That's something we don't know the answer to. But you're right. It's mystifying that it would be like that.
And I know people are texting in, well, Jim Harbaugh's not taking into account school starting and what happens when you bring students back on campus. Mm-hmm. I get that part of it. To me, that's a separate conversation. In this context, it is a Big Ten head coach saying, we have done everything you as a conference have asked us to do. We followed every guideline, even went above and beyond your minimum requirements to make sure we're doing this the right way. You give us a schedule, and then you pull the rug out from under us? Mm-hmm. There is no logic in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like I said, it opens up so many other questions with regard to eligibility issues. Someone had texted and said, if the Big Ten and Pac-12 decide not to have football this year, but the SEC and Big 12 do, and you can put ACC in that category perhaps
According to Scott Satterfield, Louisville, yeah. The ACC is full steam ahead.
Will a player from a Big Ten or Pac-12 be allowed to transfer to a UT or Bama, heaven forbid Fields to OU? I don't see that happening because it would be, first of all, student-athletes are already enrolled and others are getting enrolled, for the fall.
Yeah.
That would be the turnaround, and that would be just crazy.
If you're Justin Fields, Penei Sewell, guys in those two conferences that are going to be high draft picks, you just go ahead and get ready for the NFL draft. I mean, there's just no. And look, here's the other part of that too, Craig. I haven't heard anybody say with any semblance of conviction that the NFL is going to be willing to move the draft or shuffle things around just because college football can't figure out what it wants to do, when it wants to play, etc. The NFL is going to do what it wants to do. If it wants to hold the draft as planned in April, it's going to hold the draft in April, regardless of whether anybody likes it or not. Now, could guys play their senior, kind of like college baseball, could you play your final year knowing that the draft is coming up, and then depending on that, then you have one of that can of worms, then it's depending on where you're drafted. If you happen to be drafted in the first round, do you then say, hey, thanks, it's been fun, but I'm going to go get ready for the NFL now? So there's no good way to do this going forward.
And then there's that other speculative topic that if there is no college football on Saturdays, does that mean the NFL looks greedily at Saturday as a television window?
Well, that's what you and I were talking about during one of the breaks here today is, let's say the Big 12 and the SEC are with the ACC and those three leagues decide, you know what, we're playing. And we talked about two things. One, we're talking about the college football playoff. What's academic at that point if you want to crown a national champion? It's okay. We're going to take the three conference champions, the next best team, and go play a 14 playoff.
Yep.
There's that aspect of it. The other aspect is if you're the Big 12 and you feel like, you've got, and again, Bob Bowlesby's come out and said, look, their medical experts are saying that, there's no reason why you should shut it down. Everything looks good. If you're the Big 12, knowing that the Pac-12 and the Big 10 are no longer occupying any airtime on Fox, who's one of your big television partners, what's to stop Bob Bowlesby and the powers that be of the Big 12 from saying, you know what, let's just take all that Fox airtime to ourselves?
Yeah.
Why, instead of just hoping we get one big noon kickoff, you can have the whole day on Fox.
Yeah, it's true enough. Absolutely. A couple other texts on the Specs text line at 337-3776. Somebody said, my belief is that these conferences and ADs are scared of a lawsuit. God forbid somebody gets really sick and then they sue these schools because these kids are forced to play even though they can opt out. Forced to play is a pretty strong comment on that. Like you said, they can opt out. And what the students that in the petition that was started certainly on the West Coast schools and the Pac-12 schools is about having the ability to opt out. Tom Herman said on the Zoom conference that both of us were on Friday, if anybody chooses to opt out, there nobody, absolutely nobody is going to be pressured or held up to it saying you're not going to, if you don't feel comfortable, then you shouldn't do it, that sort of thing. And that's probably why Danny Young is opting out because of that, since he hasn't been taking advantage of or hasn't been taking part in the fall workout. Somebody else says, shouldn't these players be allowed to transfer? The immediate on-the-spot transfer I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah, I don't see how that can happen. Yeah, that's – I don't see that. Yeah.
Somebody else saying, so if they cancel the season, they give these players, seniors, another year of eligibility, won't there be way too many kids on these rosters in 2021 when the freshmen come in? See baseball. College baseball.
I think it'll be
– going to be dealing with that in the spring.
Which, by the way, is Mark Emmert still alive? Is the NCAA going to do anything?
It's crickets. Never learned anything.
Man, when you talk about useless organizations in this country, they might be if they're not number one, they're pretty close to the top of the list.
Yeah,
at this point.
So anyway, there's so many different viewpoints and perspectives on all of this right now, and a lot of this is falling along the lines of where your desire is to see football. One thing I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this as well, Jeff, over the weekend, there was quite the vitriolic theme going on social media. Some of it, on one side, you had a lot of fans, few players, and on the other side, you had media people. And the big argument seemed to be that the agenda being fomented by the one side with players and largely a lot of fans was that media, quote unquote, wants the cancellation of the football season. They want it to not have football.
If you really believe that, if you're listening right now and you really think that's the case, do me a big favor and just go take a crap with your pants on, because that is one of the most insanely idiotic.
In that case,
idiotic.
They would be trailing your 2-year-old daughter, who at least had the presence of mind
to drop Trout. Yeah. It is one of the most insanely idiotic points of view I can think of. I don't even know if I want to get into it deeper than that. Just it's so ludicrous. I don't even know where to begin.
Here's where their perspective is coming from. And it comes from a perspective of frustration, and I get the perspective of frustration. They read a tweet, they read an article, they read something in The Athletic, or they read something in SI.com or ESPN.com, or they hear something, and what it is a reporter presenting a story. The theme of the story is college football is really on the ropes. It might not happen, and that's the storyline. And there are quotes from unnamed sources and unnamed athletic directors and unnamed university presidents saying, I don't feel good about this. I think this is going to happen. I don't feel good. And so that's out there. And then the fan reads it and says, well, you just want it to go away. No, they're writing a story on that. Where it becomes difficult, I think, for a lot of fans is they see that story written 75 times in a weekend by 75 different publications. So they feel there's this tidal wave of sentiment from media who just want no football. It's not that. It's just they're reading the same story from a slightly different perspective from dozens of different media sources who have to write that story right now about, hey, it's not looking good. And they're seeing it in large volume. And that's frustrating to a lot of fans.
Yeah, there's so much stuff, Craig. Reading comprehension or lack thereof just makes me want to swallow my own eyeballs sometimes. And what I found out with unnamed sources in the years that I've been reporting, people don't have a problem with unnamed sources until it's something that you disagree with. Yeah. It's just like the whole, well, stick to sports. Well, you can talk politics just as long as it's political stuff that I agree with. Once you say something that doesn't jive with where I stand on the political spectrum, you need to stick to sports. It's just like this whole dichotomy of, oh, we support the players. I thought 2 weeks ago they were spoiled brats, that their scholarship was enough, and if they don't like it, they can go do something else. So now we're with the players because now we want a football season. So it's just we in this country, we're selfish, we're getting dumber, we can't read context clues, we don't read, we don't listen to pay attention. You want to know why media produces content we do, why we have to produce things that are shorter? Because people have short attention spans. People don't have the mental capacity to read something that's in depth. We are producing what the metrics say people are reading. That's why stuff is shorter. That's why headlines are the way they are. It's because you people, and not so there's some of you out there that are intelligent, that want to read, that want to learn. But
yes,
some
please
of
don't
you,
throw a blanket over everyone.
Some of you are collectively lowering the IQ of this county, this region, this state, this country, that we're producing it because that's what you've told us you want.
You know, the funny thing is that you could add to that rant by saying, some of you people, and you know who you are. Actually, it would be they don't know who they are.
Yes.
They might not know who they are.
Sorry for the rant there, but just, gosh, can we just wake up and just man, just educate yourselves a little bit. Just read a little. Just try to understand before just looking at a headline. You know how like the Craig, the most aggravating thing for me is I write a headline, and then the first question is something that was answered in the first paragraph of the freaking story. Yeah. If you just read it, take time to read it, it's right there in front of you.
That reminds me of two things. One, to that thing about the headline, there's that famous rant in the locker room rant collection, the one at Sparky Anderson when he was managing the Reds, and they're playing the Dodgers, and Sparky was from California, and he came out there, and he's got a brother living out there, and there was a headline that was kind of inflammatory, and the story pretty much answered the thing or diffused it or whatever. But, of course, people who don't know this, quite often, the person writing the headline is not the person who wrote the story. In fact, it's almost always the case.
In newspapers, yes, absolutely.
And this guy's, and Sparky is just fuming mad. He's like, they can just take it and stick it, blah, 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 blah. And the guy goes, well, the writer didn't write it. He's like, I don't care. Whoever the blankety-blank writer is, better control the blankety-blank headline. I'm not going to be made to look like a blankety-blank idiot. I come in this town, it's a blanking joke to come in this. Anyway, so he goes on this big rant. The other thing that comes to mind when you're talking about the brevity of content on a specific article that is written quite often goes to, I remember the quote from Jeff Goldblum. Did you ever see The Big Chill?
I did not.
No. The movie, it's just worthy of seeing. Jeff Goldblum is part of this whole group that gets together for the funeral of a friend, and they were talking, and they hadn't seen each other in a long time. They were all friends in college, and they asked him. He was writing for People magazine, and he said, "Well, you know, do you like doing that?" He goes, "Well, it depends. This and this." He goes, "You have to understand that what you write for People magazine, the extent to which you write is directly related to how long it takes to take the average crap." So in other words, it's got to be something you can read on the toilet, right? Writing for, as he said, writing for People magazine at the time. So to your point, shorter content-based articles is a lot of... a lot of the real vitriol, the anger, the frustration that comes from a lot of fans are when they see a collection of articles that are all saying largely the same thing, that, hey, this could happen. There might not be college football, and unnamed source A and unnamed source B says this. Well, they see it in 10 different sources, and so now they feel like there's this ganging up that's going on, when in fact it's not that at all. It's just we as a sports-consuming society have far more sources than we have ever had.
Yeah.
Of consuming our sports-related content online, on apps. Right now, I've got an iPad open to a story on The Athletic. I have my phone that's open to another story. I have my laptop. And then there's the big screen here. I have four different sources running right now of different perspectives. Ironically, they're almost all saying the same thing, because that is the narrative going on today.
And think about it. Just look at it from a Texas perspective. And I would say, as a Texas fan, you're lucky, because there's a lot of good people covering this program that do really good work.
No question.
But there's two radio stations in town. And obviously, we're the flagship, and great for us. And I do believe we're number one in that regard. But two radio stations in town. There's four TV stations, Craig, right? Because I guess Spectrum still there, but they don't have like a sports
in terms of covering the team on a daily basis.
Right. Yeah, so two radio stations, four TV stations.
Right,
you've got the Statesman, you've got the Morning News, and Nick Moyle, because of the Hearst situation, covers them for the Houston Chronicle and the Express News.
Right,
you've got Hornets 24/7, you've got Orange Bloods, you've got Inside Texas, you've also got sites for outlets like Sports Illustrated, USA Today. Mm-hmm. So
The Athletic.
We're in the double digits right there with just outlets that cover the University of Texas.
So there's going to be some overlap.
And on the web front, you can have a story, but the people that I talk to aren't necessarily going to be the same people that Anwar Richardson's talking to, or that Brian Davis is talking to. So that's why you could see different sources saying different things, because it's not like we're all on speed dial with each other when a story comes out and doing like a teleconference. It's everybody's doing their own independent reporting, and that's how that whole process works.
True enough. All right. Now, even though we've just told you all of this stuff and there's some gloom and doom out there and what might happen, yada, yada, so on and so forth, We did begin the Horn's top 20 countdown today. So
yes, we did.
We're going to tell you about the number 20 team in the collaborative effort of the Horn's top 20 countdown. Coming up when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. It's the final time. Gonna hit the road, start looking holy. Continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn. Craig and Jeff with you. So we have had one group of five school, another group of five, in addition to UConn, announcing that they are not going to play football this fall, Jeff. Old Dominion, is it?
Yeah, before we get to that, Snoop, you can just let this play through the whole segment if you want. That's good stuff. Yeah. Yeah, actually, Snoop, go ahead and give me a breaking news sounder, if you will. Yes, Old Dominion, Craig, they are the first Conference USA program to announce they are shutting it down for the 2020 season.
Old Dominion, in case you're wondering, they're in Conference USA. That would be in there with UTSA and North Texas and Rice, among others, and UTEP. They went 1-11 last year. Their schedule, I was just looking at their schedule, there's really only two games, no, well, there's really only two games other than the conference schedule that are noteworthy. They were going to open against Wake Forest on a Friday at home, by the way, and then they were, and then they have a had a game with Virginia at home. So they had a couple of home games against ACC opponents, but other than that, they were going to have a road game at UConn. We know UConn's already gotten rid of their season, and then the rest of it. Is Hampton out of was a school out of a conference that's not playing, so everything else would have been conference play for
Hampton
them.
And the MEAC, correct?
They were transitioning into the Colonial.
Gotcha.
But anyway, so that and then the rest of it were conference games, which included, by the way, a game scheduled for October 17th in the Alamo Dome at UTSA. That was a conference game. But the rest were conference games. So in the grand scheme, let's say this were just a regular year and they couldn't go, it probably wouldn't have registered that much. But the mere fact now, because everybody's looking for the next shoe to drop and the next shoe to drop and the next shoe to drop, now Old Dominion has announced that they're not going to play.
Yep, and I saw a report. John Wilner from the Bay Area News Group, who does a really good job covering the Pac-12, reported that the Pac-12 presidents have not made a final decision to cancel the season and will not until tomorrow at the earliest. So, I don't know, Craig, maybe that's just some posturing, but yeah, it looks like all expectations are at this point, by the time we get to close of business tomorrow on a, well, the term Business Tuesday kind of takes on a literal meaning now, doesn't it? By the time we get to the close of business, it sounds like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten will both have officially pulled the plug on fall football in 2020.
We'll certainly see where that's going on that. Okay. So now, even with all that said, today was day one.
Let's talk about our rankings.
Yeah, the Horn Top 20 Countdown.
Can I get a countdown?
It's the Horn's College Football Top 20, presented by Allstat Beer. Number 20, the Iowa State Cyclones.
Purdy, back to the air, floats one, wide open. Touchdown, ISU, Charlie Kohler.
Well, we'll indeed see if we do have football. Now, even in the plus one model, Iowa State was working to reschedule because they'd lost their Iowa game. They've already rescheduled the UNLV game by 10 years, going from 2020 to 2030. South Dakota was on the schedule for the 5th, so we'll see. All that said, this is a program that's been on the rise under Matt Campbell. Had back-to-back eight-win season. They went 7-6 last year. Lost their last two games. Lost to Kansas State on the road, and then got throttled by Notre Dame in the Camping World Bowl. But it's a team that returns a large measure of its defense. In fact, the eight defensive starters, and they have one of the better quarterbacks in the Big 12 Conference in Brock Purdy.
Yeah, I wonder if that eight. I would assume, Craig, that does not include Jaquan Bailey, who technically was not a starter last year because he didn't play. He ended up having to take a red shirt due to medical.
Exactly right.
I think a knee or a shoulder. I don't remember which one, but I know he was hurt and didn't play last year. But, yeah, and probably you know, when you look at what they do defensively with that three-man front and, you know, got that drop eight coverage, playing that inverted Tampa 2 with the overhang safety. Greg Eisworth is a big part of that Texas kid, by the way, at South Grand Prairie.
John Haycock's work as a coordinator.
Yeah, and, you know, and that John Haycock defense, you know, Todd Orlando kind of copied it, and we've seen it throughout the country now. Everybody's kind of taking the framework of that and putting their own spin on it. Craig, I think probably on the biggest stage we've seen it, go back and look at that Fiesta Bowl last year. Like, Clemson was running that same style of defense last year in the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State. But, yeah, when you know, in terms of roster talent, Craig, and we don't know at this point if there's going to be a schedule, what said schedule is going to look like. In terms of a roster, this is Matt Campbell's most talented roster. This will be the most talented roster he's ever had. We mentioned Bailey and Eisworth on defense. Obviously, you go to offense. It starts with Brock Purdy at quarterback, who you know, I don't know where you come out on this, Craig. I don't really care about such matters, but I think we can all agree Sam Ehlinger is the most accomplished quarterback in the Big 12 in terms of a tenured guy. I think some draft experts would probably tell you Brock Purdy might be the better NFL prospect. I guess that and $5 will get you a cup of coffee. But regardless, you know, Breece Hall coming back at running back. You bring back, you know, Tariq Milton at wide receiver. And Charlie Kolar, who was
I think Charlie Kolar's the best tight end in the Big 12. And one of the best in the country.
I thought you were going to say country. I think there's
a
question.
Well, he's one of the best. Yeah, one of only four tight ends to accumulate, 675 yards of reception yard, and only three of those four were FBS programs.
Yeah, so, 51 catches last year. I think he might be the best tight end in the country. I don't think there's any question he's the best tight end in the country.
He's right there.
Yeah.
He's right up there with it. So it would be premature. This may all be premature anyway, just to do a top 20, but it would be premature really to go down the schedule because the schedule had not been announced. For anybody that looks at it and says, well, you know, they get Oklahoma at home on October 17th, they have to coming off going to Stillwater. We don't know that because if the Big 12 Conference does as we hear, let's just for the sake of argument. Some might say suspend reality. Let's say they are going to play the fall, that they are, that there will be football this fall in the Big 12. Let's just say that for a moment. If we're operating under that premise, it also means that we're operating under the premise that the Big 12 Conference is going to start on September 26th with conference play. You play your plus one. You have 3 weeks to get that plus one game in one way or another, the 5th, the 12th, the 19th. But on the 26th, is supposedly what we're hearing when conference play would start. Well, we already know that would mean a reshuffling of the deck. Texas was scheduled to have an open date on that date, and other teams were as well. And not only that, there was going to be a conference game on the 12th between Kansas and Baylor. Mm-hmm. So there was going to be a reshuffling of conference games. Does it mean that it would be a reshuffling of who's at home and who's on the road? Not necessarily. That would probably still hold.
Right.
But when those games might be played, and when they won, that might be completely different. So to say that Iowa State is going to play in Stillwater on the 10th and then get OU at home on the 17th might be completely off base. We don't know. And even if there's football this fall, we don't know that about the Big 12.
And if you're just looking at it road home, Craig, Iowa State on the road in conference play, Kansas, Oklahoma State, TCU, and Texas.
That's difficult.
Are the road games for the Cyclones, you know,
State, TCU, and Texas would be the three tough ones. Obviously.
The more I think about it, Craig, when I think about, you know, what are the challenges of going on the road now that you know you might not have a crowd, period, and if you do, it'll be a sliver of what it could be.
Absolutely, totally agree.
Like the environment Matt Campbell brought a team into DKR to play the last time he was here, compared to what it'll be this fall. It's apples and pomegranates. It's not even
no doubt.
Yeah, not even in the same ballpark. But I think the challenge of playing on the road now is with testing and everything else.
Exactly. That's where I was going to go with.
Can your team mentally handle the logistics overload, let's say, of leaving campus together, getting on a bus, then getting on a plane, then landing the plane, everything you've got to go through, whereas the home team, they're at least in the environment of, look, we're going through all these protocols, but we're doing it at home. And we know it's our environment. We're sleeping in our own beds, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. This wasn't about being intimidated by a road crowd when I said it'd be tough.
Right.
No, it's more about, can you handle 72 nasal swab tests the night before a game? Plus all the other safety protocols that take you out of your comfort zone in a hotel and then the next day at the stadium and everything you go through as a visiting team. Not road crowd, but the change in environment and the conditions by which you're being placed, under which you're being placed, to contest a college football game. That's the challenge of the road this year. No matter if we're having football or not, I mean, whether we're having full-on, whether you're playing 10 games, 12 games, whatever, 9 games, whatever it is, the challenge is, can you do it on the road given these new measures, guidelines, and challenges under which you're supposed to operate?
You know, the thing that makes me nervous about, and I think I had Iowa State 5th in my Big 12 preseason poll. Not that the preseason poll matters at this point anyway, because everything you
could.
Who'd
you have 4th?
I believe I had TCU 4th.
Okay. All right. It's close. I think it's close. It could go either way.
I think I had TCU.
I think Iowa State I had 4th, but it's close.
I'll go back and pull it up here in a second. Not that it matters anymore, but one thing that makes me kind of nervous, Craig, about, and when you and I did our portion of the of the top 20 when we submitted this for,
which is, by the way, it's a combined ballot for all of us for the Horn top 20 ballot. All the shows, all the personalities from the show, combined ballot, send it in, and that is what the, as you like to say in the recruiting game, the composite.
Exactly. We did not have Iowa State ranked in the top 20. We did not have Iowa State in our top 20. And the thing that made me nervous about putting Iowa State in our poll was they play a lot of tight games, a lot of one-possession games, and that's one of those numbers that when you talk about one-possession games, success or failure doesn't typically translate to the following year. Well, if you lost a lot of those, maybe you can win those. No, I think that's just kind of Iowa State football under Matt Campbell, similar to why I get nervous when trying to put Texas somewhere in a ranking under Tom Herman. When you play a lot of close games, you don't really give yourself – the margin for error shrinks, so it really just makes you nervous on figuring, okay, could they get on a roll or could they lose 3 or 4? Yeah, there's one of those teams where it could go either way.
Well, they had to go triple overtime to beat an FCS team in Northern Iowa. And I know it's an in-state rivalry thing or whatever. They lost by a point to Iowa. Definitely a winnable game in Waco. And lost
Should have won that game.
Yeah, and lost that one. Definitely a winnable game in Norman. Mm-hmm. And lost that
came
one.
Down to a failed 2-point conversion.
Yeah, so
we got
obviously the Texas game they were able to win,
and you know Texas, man, I go back and forth, Craig. I think you've convinced me because all offseason I've been like the TCU game is the one that probably sticks in Tom Herman's craw. You and a few others have convinced me. No, it's probably the Iowa State
game.
That's the one. I mean, you had as bad as you played to be in it to be in it at halftime. As bad as they played in the first half.
And for people who want to take the shots, and I have no disagreement with you whatsoever, that want to just roast the offense or lack thereof in the game, I get it. I totally get it. All that said, they had the lead with under 2 minutes to go, and the defense could not stop the last drive for Iowa State that led to the walk-off field goal. So you're right. That's the one that gets away. That's the one that you come away with. So we'll see. We'll see if it if hopefully – we have a chance to see if the Longhorns can even it up when they play Iowa State. But there's Iowa State, ranked 20th in the composite Horn top 20 preseason.
I have no idea
rankings.
What in the blue hell I did with my Big 12 preseason poll. I thought I saved it on my computer, and I can't find it now.
Okay.
So maybe I'll dig that thing out for tomorrow.
All right. We'll be back to wrap up Light the Tower here on the Horn. So we get ready to wrap it up here, and it is getting to the end of this, here's Infernal Bertle says, am I the only one that loves Jeff's grumpy old man nature? His rants make my day.
Yeah, I try not to rant, but sometimes, Craig, you gotta call it like you see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you've been seeing it,
yeah.
You've been calling it as you've been seeing it.
I will say, pandemic's made me a little more ornery than I normally am.
Yeah. Okay.
Between that and potty training a two-year-old, it's I had to take my daughter to swim lessons yesterday. That was
how'd that go?
Challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Challenging. Trying to get a two-year-old to float on her back and not flip out. So she's fine. She's fine. Like you know how it is with a two-year-old.
She didn't poop in the pool.
No, she didn't. She's fine about 80% of the time.
Yeah.
But man, that 20 almost outweighs the 80 when stuff's going bad, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Somebody said, yes, it's true. The Texas defense couldn't stop the Texas offense from running the ball because it's Coach Herman's bad offensive calls that lost that game. There were a lot of things that you're talking about that Iowa State game. There were a lot of things that led to that.
A menagerie of ineptitude in a number of ways.
Yeah.
So, but I'm with you, Craig, at this point. That's probably the one that Tom Herman would want to have back last year if he could have one.
Yeah. Listen, let's hope we're talking about having the opportunity to square it, to balance the books.
Because, I'd much rather be talking about the binder than talking about no binder.
Yeah. So we'll find out.
Something of that nature.
We invite you to stay tuned, continue to follow it, because this thing seems to be updating hourly. So coming up next, Shirts and Skins, Chad and Trey, followed by RBKD, the triple option at 3 o'clock. For Jeff Howe and for our man behind the glass, Snoop Daniel, I'm Craig Way. We thank you for joining us. We'll visit with you tomorrow right here on Light the Tower.
Guys love shopping at Diamonds Direct because they can always get a bigger, better diamond for less.
We got a higher quality diamond for less money than we looked at any other stores that we went to.
I even shopped down in Mexico.